Hello, Hoosier fans.
Hoosiers.
Tuesday, December 13th, 10 p.m. in the evening. This will probably drop on the 14th. This is episode 5. No, season 5, yo. Episode 6.
Get your stats right.
Of the Hoosier Town Breakdown. I'm Alan Platt, and that is...
I'm Greg Nash. And then, Alan, I just want to remind our listeners, this is a podcast for Hoosiers... by Hoosiers.
That's right.
Thanks for coming in tonight.
Thanks a lot. So we've spent the last hour messing around with recording equipment, and we're now using a new rig that Greg and his family have, and hopefully it's recording. So that's what I'm going to say about
it's
that.
It's a Sweetwater sound.
Yeah. So anyway, I hope you're enjoying the dulcet sounds and tones of your hosts. We're glad to be here.
I've got headphones on for the first time in 5 seasons, and it's sounding real strong.
Silky sweet.
Just strong.
Gosh, Greg, great time to get together here before the holidays.
Merry Christmas.
Sweet Mary. Merry Christmas. Haven't talked for a while. We got a lot of things to cover and a short time to get there. I think we're gonna tee it up this way. Let's start with the Indiana Hoosiers on the soccer pitch.
Let's cover the spectrum on the Hoosier sports front.
Boy, I'm going to tell you, it was the Hoosiers are truly an amazing soccer program, the finest in the NCAA history of men's soccer.
Most Elite Eights ever, most college cups ever, most title games ever.
Unbelievable.
Eight national championships.
So we end up in the college cup finals last night.
Yeah, last night against the Q's from Orange, yeah. The Orangemen from Syracuse.
It was tough because I've watched a number of finals. I was actually at the championship game when IU defeated Howard back in the late 80s, early 90s, which was played at Bill Armstrong Stadium. And
by the way, the golden era of IU sports, the 80s, late 80s, geez.
Yeah.
We were winning championships in basketball, soccer, and we were on the cusp of Big Ten titles for football.
We had, basically in the end, Syracuse came in ranked third. The Hoosiers were 13th. And in the end, it gets down to penalty kicks. The Hoosiers twice equalized the match, down 1-0 and then down 2-1, and like I said, equalize the match. But then we get into overtime, the 2 10-minute periods played, and finally went to penalty kicks and lost in a kind of heartbreaking shootout, 7-6, to lose the, or to become runners-up. Let's say it that way, the 2022 Men's College Cup runners-up. But the Hoosiers have had a really, really disappointing result in a number of these matches over the years. And this was shared on Twitter. So in 2016, they get knocked out of the Sweet 16 by a golden goal, which means a goal in overtime, which used to be the format utilized. 2017, golden goal loss in the title game. In 2018, they lost in the semifinal game. 2019, they lost golden goal loss in the Sweet 16. 2020, golden goal loss in the title game. 2021, golden goal loss in Sweet 16. And then last night, 7-6 in PKs. So as wonderful as the Hoosiers are, those are disappointing for that team because ultimately they could have 12, 13, 14 national championships stacked up, but for a bounce here and there, but certainly proud of them. And I think I kept you up on text.
Yeah, I was out and about all over the place, dropping kids off here and going to basketball games there and visiting a lot of gyms in the area. But appreciate the updates. you were giving me almost play by play on text, and then the last text was we lost.
Yeah,
and so it's a brutal way to lose penalty kicks in a national championship game, and to your point, feel like we could have had. I mean, most programs would clamor for eight titles and the type of success we've had, but you know what? It still hurts. I mean, I think this year, someone said that it may have even been more painful the last time we're in the title game because we dominated throughout the season.
Yeah, it was really one of the best seasons of in college history. The team was dominant. They hardly had been scored against through the tournament. Went in ranked number one, undefeated.
Yeah, so in this year we kind of really had a maybe underperforming or underwhelming regular season, and really just made a late push in the tournament. But you know, so it's it is what it is. But you look at that program and the continuity of it. It's had two coaches, a father and a son, over 40 plus years, or however long it's been. I think it's been 48 years.
Yeah.
And so absolute picture of consistency, continuity, culture. And so there's a reason that that program is, that's one of the big reasons it's had the consistent success it's had. And,
yeah.
And we talk about this as it relates to college basketball. I mean, look at some of the great programs of the last couple of decades, and they've had continuity of coaches. They've had a consistent culture. They've recruited a system, and it's worked. And so that's, we won't transition to basketball just yet, but that's something that we've had to overcome. We've had seven coaches in the last 20 plus years. You know, we still have an NBA coach that's trying to figure out the college game. So we'll go back to that in a minute. But I'm just talking about as it relates to the soccer program. It's pretty amazing what they've been able to do.
For sure. And, you know, we had six players on the field that started 2 years earlier in the finals. And so they really wanted a chance to redeem themselves, and they get out there. And, you know, they I will tell you that I've never – I'm not sure I've ever seen a team just leave everything on the field. And it is cliche sometimes, I think, as Todd Yeagley said afterwards. But they absolutely gave everything they had. And it was just a great match. So if you're not into soccer, you're not alone. I have not been, or wasn't for a long time. But it is an absolutely thrilling game. It's at the same time super exciting to watch and horrifying to watch, because one goal can make the difference in a match. And so every time there's a ball gets close to the goal, you got to stay awake, because it can happen quickly. So
well, it was so hard to find anything on the ESPN app about the game. You had to have someone text you or follow it on Twitter a little bit, or I mean, you've had ESPNU, of course, but it's unlike volleyball, which has become immensely popular because it's so fun to watch and so fast paced, and so you contrast that with, because I'm thinking if IU actually did win last night, the press that they would get relative to, say, like U of L being in the volleyball Final Four is minimal.
For sure.
And that's just kind of how it is.
No, for sure. Well, anyway, a lot of these players will be back. I think the Hoosiers will be ranked highly coming into the next season, and we'll continue to watch them and kind of report back when things happen. But this one justified some time.
We'll only report the good stuff.
That's right. But this one definitely. So let's turn to the Hoosiers. And we were talking about consistency. And we've had a little bit of consistency in the Rutgers game, in that it looked a little bit like our team of last year at times.
Yeah, that was the outcome in terms of losing a game at the rack was not surprising, because they've beaten us. I think it's seven straight years, eight out of the last nine. Yeah, that doesn't make me feel very good.
Board has sound effects, so there's going to be some added in here and there. And by the way, I don't know which one's which. They're just lovely glowing buttons. So
they are pretty. They're pretty.
So there might be crickets. Maybe build a little suspense. I can't tell you.
It's like Christmas over there.
Okay. Anyway.
So, yeah, that Rutgers game, I think that was probably the most disappointing aspect of that.
Yeah, disappointment's completely the word I had for that.
We got run. We got run at the rack.
Mess.
Jersey Mike's Arena.
Yeah.
So they out-toughed us. They outplayed us. They out-hustled us. That game clearly meant more to them than it did us. Not having Jalen Hood-Schifino did hurt, and it was the first game without him, and so our team was adjusting to that. When he's out, as we talked about pre-show when we were pre-gaming, and more importantly trying to figure out this equipment, without him, he provides kind of a steady, calming presence in the backcourt. He's a natural point guard, natural ball handler, which means that X doesn't have to do as much. He doesn't feel as pressured or as rushed or as anxious to try to do too much. So then without Schifino, then X kind of has to be that. He feels like he has to be that guy again. And then it brings Galloway in as our secondary ball handler. And he's not really a natural ball handler. And then it kind of brings Trace out on the perimeter a little bit more. And then it just affects and guys have to shift. So that, I'm not saying that would have been the difference in the game, but I do think we compete better. And I think Same way with Arizona. Not sure Shafino would have made the difference in that game because Arizona was, they're just the better team. They're the more complete program right now, and they've got five guys that are lanky, lengthy, and can all shoot. They just beat us. What I did like about the Arizona game was that we showed a lot of fight. Arizona went on a 17-0 run early in the first half, had a 27-8 lead. I mean, in years past, we probably would have rolled over. Yeah, but
the tents would have been folded.
We did fight back. We showed some grit, and quite frankly, shots started going in.
Yeah, there's no moral victories there. I know at this point, this team is not about, it shouldn't be about moral victories. So we definitely lost. But to Greg's point, I you can't help but be appreciative of the fact that IU continued to play like they thought that, you know, and believe that they had a chance to win. And I think there's a handful of moments in that game where some bounces, some calls, some things like that could have gone a little differently. And you can't blame this on the referees. The referees were horrible. I don't think there's any question about that. But, you know, there could have been some things go a little bit different, and the Hoosiers would have been in a very tight ball game down the stretch with a chance to win. And really, I was texting with my dad during the game, and when the Hoosiers kind of fought back, I just said something along the lines of, I just would like us to make sure we stay connected to them so we have a chance at the end. And what happened was we let them get away. I think it got down to 3 or 4. In the second half, and then we let them get away and have a comfortable lead going into the end, to where they didn't have to, really feel the pressure that we would have otherwise been able to put on them. And so we the Hoosiers go down in defeat, and 89-75 finish. So yeah, where does it leave us, Greg?
Well, there was, you know, touch on that. There were 3 points in the second half, I thought, where we cut it to 3. And then another time we cut it to 4, another time we cut it to 6, where it's like, okay, we keep mounting these comebacks, but then they just kept finding a way to hit a big shot and make a big play. And that's what great teams do. But good teams find a way to stay connected, like you say, to stay close. And we are a good team. I mean, I think this is a good basketball team. It's solid. I mean, I think we deserve to be in the top 20. I think we're a top 20 team. And I just think that right now the fans are kind of dealing with some of the maybe tempered expectations that all preseason it was deemed that we were going to be the team to beat in the Big Ten. And we talked about that. I don't know if that was fair or not, but we were of all the teams in the Big Ten, we had more knowns than unknowns. We had more returning players, and those were players that solid for us last year. So they're returning. And so those are knowns. And sometimes the media is going to vote you in as well, they've got to be preseason number one because we know more about them. Well, now Purdue has kind of stolen that thunder. They've taken the spotlight and they're playing lights out, and they've got just about everything you need, except they don't have an experienced backcourt, but so far their backcourt has been solid. So that's, you combine our recent losing 2 out of the last 3 and the way we lost Rutgers and the fact that that's an embarrassing losing streak against them. And Purdue's climbing the ranks to number one. And, you know, it kind of makes Hoosiers a little restless. Hoosier fans a little restless. So, but where we're at is statistically, and I will say statistically because I think we're a little behind where I thought we'd be on rebounding as far as actual statistics. Arizona rebounded 44% of their shots, and Rutgers rebounded 41% of their shots. That's a terrible statistic. But rankings-wise, record-wise, we're about where I think a lot of people thought we would be at this time. We're 8-2. We had those four non-conference games: Xavier, Carolina, Arizona, Kansas. We kind of thought if we could split those, go 2-2. Well, even if we lose to Kansas this Saturday, we would be 2-2. It's just that Rutgers game kind of sticks out, and you hate to get off the Big Ten, a conference you're projected to win, with a loss. But I still think the two key factors are going to be our two best players' health. Jalen Hood-Schifino, his back issues. Based on what Coach Woodson said on his radio show last night, he's just now starting to like put up shots. I don't think we're going to see him again until January, based on that, because I definitely don't think he's playing Saturday. That's what I gather. And then we've got a couple, Elon and Kennesaw State. He'll probably rest there. And then we don't have Iowa to that first week of January. Same with Trace. I think he plays this Saturday, but I think he gets 2 weeks rest after that. The back issues are concerning.
They both have back issues, which is, I can't even remember the last time we had a player with a back issue, and we've got two almost simultaneously. And I suspect that if Schifino wasn't out, you know, there was a possibility during that 3-game stanza where, you know, Trace might have been out an extra game. But because he sees a little ginger, you know, moving around a little gingerly at different times.
Trace comes in the huddles and he's holding his back and wincing about half the time. And he's never fouled out in his IU career, except two of the last three games he's fouled out. Mm-hmm. And so I just think he's, you know, they're playing him different. They're being very physical with him. They're bodying him. And I don't think his physical stature is where it should be. I honestly think he's playing 70%. And when you don't feel good or you've got, you know, back issues or back pain, I mean, you're just not your same self in terms of your quickness, your ability to shift and move, gets out of position a little more, and it creates fouls. And he's got to get that right.
Yeah, we've also been unfortunate to officiating is what it is in the world today. It by and large in college basketball, I find it to be problematic. I just don't think it's good. But I definitely think in the Rutgers game and then in the Arizona game, we saw some really bad officiating. And so, you know, I think X got a couple fouls on him early that just were ridiculous. Obviously, there was a goaltending call that was completely missed. I mean, well documented at this point. I think a flop call against Renew that, along with the missed goaltending, those two things helped kind of change the game at that point as far as momentum, about a 5-point swing. So, but to take all those things away, we still have the issues that we had last year, but for Renew and Schifino, and those ads have changed the dynamics of our team. And when they're all healthy, and let's assume we can get into February and March with the whole team healthy and Trace healthy, this is going to be a good team, and they are going to have benefited greatly from certainly from the Arizona game. They will benefit from the Kansas game, regardless of the outcome of that. And they will benefit from losing at the rack, because that will be, you know, something easy to point to say we can lose any night in the Big Ten against anybody. And Rutgers is good, but they shouldn't have beat us, and they shouldn't have owned us like that. And the fact that it happened after Geo Baker was on a radio show kind of lighting us up, or a podcast lighting us up and saying IU's soft, no one's scared of IU, and then we go out and get punked.
Yeah.
That was maybe the most painful.
That is. And he's not wrong, and he said it again yesterday. He said no one's going to get punked by Indiana. It's just, I told you they were soft. You know, and it's irritating, but what are you going to do? So I think some of the silver linings of those losses and of the injury to Schifino is that it's allowed Bates to really kind of assert himself a little bit more offensively and kind of get in the flow. I think he's getting more minutes, and I think that's someone who I think can be effective. He just needs to make shots. He's going to have the ability to hit some pull-up jumpers, hit some threes, spread the defense a little bit. I think he needs that. I think he needs those minutes and that confidence. And I feel incredibly lucky that Galloway's healthy this year.
Because for sure. He adds a lot, too.
He sat out a few games early. Imagine we didn't have him right now. And then the other thing that I think is a revelation is Miller Kopp is clearly more comfortable in this system this year. He doesn't wonder if he's the primary shooter and is Parker Stewart the secondary, or is Parker the primary and he's the secondary? He's the primary guy. Yep. He's the primary shooter. And if we can get him going with some shots, that guy's effective. He's shooting 48% from 3-point range this year. Galloway in limited numbers, because he hasn't put up as many attempts, as 44%, and Bates is 41. We would have killed for those percentages last year.
Yeah, those are going to start to pay dividends as time goes on. I think we end up in the Arizona game 10 for 25 for 40% as a team. But Kopp's line, he played all but 1 minute of that game, was 5 of 9 field goal shooting, 4 of 8 from 3-point range, and only had one turnover and 14 points on the night, which, like you said, I like this Miller Kopp, and I think that his use in this offense is really, really going to, again, be much more valuable when you have Schifino in there, because everybody's more in their natural position. You've got an additional ball handle that can distribute and get it to a guy like Kopp. He moves well. He's ready and loaded, you know, to shoot. But if you notice, with Schifino out, the ball does not get delivered to him as well as it did earlier in the season.
Yeah, that's very true. Schifino really knows how to put the ball in a position. And Trace, he's an elite passer for the most part out of double teams and whipping it across the court. But I guess the other thing that I am a little bit not worried about, because I think I still think he's got the ability to make more impact as we go forward is Geronimo. I think going into the season, we thought he might be a breakthrough player. I still think he's trying to find his place. I still think he's trying to find his position on the floor. There was so much talk going into the season that maybe he'd play more of the wing, more of the three, but he's just not good enough ball handler to do that. So he did not play a second in the second half against Arizona.
And I don't know
if there's something there or if he wasn't just felt like, look, we can't have him out there as a, you know, trying to handle the ball or playing the three because he's more of a liability. But I think like last year, as the season went on and once everybody got healthy and everybody was in their natural spots and positions, I think he'll find his way. He's way too talented to not make impact and bring something. I think Malik Renew is getting a dose of big boy basketball these last few games. He's kind of his effectiveness has kind of leveled off a little bit, and he's committed a lot of fouls and kind of got frustrated with that. But
he doubts himself a lot more than he did early in the season. I think early in the season, given the matchups and the quality of players he was going against, Renew seemed very comfortable. And, you know, just like defenses, a lot of times it's just about making the other team uncomfortable. He's uncomfortable. And you can see it in his footwork changes, his passing, the crispness of passing, how he goes at the basket. He's missed a lot of just of those up close and, you know, bunny shots that typically early in the season he was making, and we were all kind of marveling at his ability. But that's okay because that's just part of the growing process. And again, I think his upside is really huge. So I don't think we'll ever regret him, Malik Renew, being on the floor, because I think every minute he's there, he's growing as a player, and he's going to be a kind of an all-time favorite, I think, at IU if he stays around.
We're going to need him February 4th to sweep the leg on Edie. We'll need that. So
yeah, that will be interesting because Purdue rose to the number one rankings in the country this week, and they beat Davidson tonight. They went to the Phil Knight Legacy thing and won two big games there, and they've played well. They're they've had to replace a number of starters, and to be able to do that and then go to number one. And we can compare this to IU soccer, consistency of coaches, coaches over almost 40 years.
That's exactly what I was going to go to earlier, but
he has a system. He has a type of player he wants. And you know, IU, we've talked a lot about in the last 2 years plus how toughness is an issue. And I think toughness is still an issue for the Hoosiers. It's not just about being one person pushing people around, et cetera. It's about a team toughness. And Purdue, when you watch them, they have that. And IU needs to get it. You know, whether or not a team can develop that, or you just need personalities over the years to get there. But that along with their consistency and good coaching has really served them well. So, Greg, we really need to turn our attention to the corporate sponsor for this podcast tonight.
Well, we do. It's times like this that we appreciate good food, and just sometimes after a tough penalty kick defeat in the national title game, you need some comfort food. Alan, if you were gallivanting up and down Highway 131 in Clarksville circa 1982, and you were hankering for some, maybe a margarita, maybe some fried ice cream, maybe some chips and salsa, maybe a little enchilada, where would you venture to?
I'd probably got my sled right into the parking lot for Chi-Chi's.
Oh, Chi-Chi's. You hit it. You hit the nail on the head, baby. That's it. Chi-Chi's. They've been knocking on our door for
a
couple
come
years.
In. Ah, so good to get them.
I went back and looked at their records and their financials, and they really didn't make the cut until now.
Yeah.
I think statute of limitations, I think the fact that they declared bankruptcy in 2004 puts them in a prime position to be our corporate sponsor for this December 13th episode. And I mean, fried ice cream, who doesn't like that?
Probably the best deal. You know, if you were a hungry lad in college and you went to, let's say, happy hour at Chi-Chi's, you could get all the free nachos, chips, and dip that you like. You'd buy yourself a margarita and have yourself a fried ice cream at the end. You're leaving there for less than $10, but you're a happy camper.
Yeah, it was kind of an acceptable dine and dash feeling, because you come in and like, oh yeah, you guys ready to order? I'm like, no, just keep bringing the chips and salsa, they're free, right?
Yep. I'd bust out a $2 tip to the waiter, in fact, and still leave with just $10 in. So,
with inflation, that's like a $60 tip today.
Well, now it is. Yeah. But, you know,
so, thank you, Chi-Chi's, for your loyal support. And, if you, got the hankering for some Mexican fare, I suggest you, keep driving on 131 and find something else. Oh, it's Lewis and Clark Parkway now.
Yeah, they also used to bust out the birthday song there. It had the line, Chi-Chi's wishes you the best, dot, 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 in it. So
yeah.
Anyway, great. Great to have them aboard. And I'm going to give a sound effect for Chi-Chi's. We love you long time. Okay.
Did Chi-Chi Rodriguez own that?
No, he didn't. But by the way, our younger listeners don't even know about Chi-Chi's, and yet some of the finest salsa on the shelves of grocery stores is from Chi-Chi's.
The legacy lives on the aisle 13 of Kroger. And, so get you some salsa, reminisce, and Google it if you need to.
Yeah, please. All right, Greg. Well, let's. What else have we got here? Guests to talk about with our people. I guess we need to look forward to Kansas.
Let's look forward to Kansas and then look much further forward to Elon. Because I think with Kansas, I do think they're a better matchup for us. Arizona was a really bad matchup. That's a team I would not want to see in the tournament. I think they are a legit Final Four team.
7-footer and a 6'11 feller right there in the middle. And they really, a little bit like Rutgers, maybe they took a little bit of their game planning from the Rutgers game, unfortunately. They really loaded the front line down and junked up the lane, and we had to kind of work around that. Thankfully, with Race being able to hit some threes, and as was Miller, we were in that, you know, we were able to kind of scrap back as we discussed. But I think the matchup with Kansas is better. I think they'll guard us a lot more one-on-one. They probably won't double as much, although it may happen some, just because they're going to want to force us like other teams to prove that we can hit from outside.
I feel like having played at Xavier, a true road game in a pretty raucous environment, We'll prep us a little bit for that, but it's going to be next level insanity at the Fog Allen Fieldhouse and playing the defending national champions. And it's a test. I think I don't even know what the spread is, but I think early season back this predictor thing we looked at a couple months ago, it had us like a 40% chance of winning, obviously without Schifino, and given the recent losses we've had, my guess is we'll have about a 35% chance of winning, and I'm guessing Kansas favored by 7.
Yeah, I was thinking 7 or 8.
Yeah, for all you gamblers out there. But
that's a noon tip on December 17th.
A nooner. So I don't know. I just want to be competitive. I want them to show fight. I want them to stay close and have a chance. And that's really all you can ask. I do think that playing games like Arizona out in Vegas, which, by the way, we had an incredibly huge Hoosier population out there.
Sully Man was there.
Loyal listener, Sully Man made the trip. And
Scott Sullivan, way to go, buddy. I'm glad you represented.
Was he gauging the representation and said like 80% IU fans, maybe?
He certainly said at least of the walking around folks in Vegas, there it was clearly a strong Hoosier contingent.
And you wonder, and this, I don't know, maybe we get off the rails here a little bit, but was IU too hyped up? I mean, we had a ton of fans that walked through MGM. That had to just pump those guys up.
Yeah.
We missed one of our first 10 3-pointers. We only hit one. They were long. I don't know. I just felt like we were maybe overjacked. But getting back to, I'm really glad we are playing in games like Arizona in Vegas and at Kansas. And then, of course, next year Kansas comes. It's better than the Crossroads Classic, right? An upgrade. And we should have been the fourth team in the Champions Classic. And because of the Crossroads Classic contract, that's where Ohio State got to enter that. But that should be us in the Champions Classic with Michigan State, Kentucky, and UCLA. I can't remember. So this is definitely an upgrade from Crossroads. And it shows that IU still has, you know, a national footprint, an incredible loyal fan base that's just dying to have a successful season. So as much as Purdue's number one and some of these other programs are up and coming, it's still IU. We still have an amazing brand, an amazing following, amazing loyalty, and now we just need to kind of keep moving. But Arizona is the kind of team we need to be. We aspire to be, right? You've got couple of future pros on that team. You've got length, you've got shooters, you've got experience, you've got a nice free flowing offense. Honestly, to put up 75 points against them, that's going to beat most teams.
But yeah, and they're made up of a
lot of international
almost
players.
Like an international team, mm-hmm. Several of which are playing at the almost like the semi-pro level in some of their countries. So, definitely a team that they've put together well. And but I still think that environment, that type of team, is one that we just need to play because it'll still pay dividends at the end of the year. A lot of people mentioned it had a NCAA tournament feel. You don't get that in the games that we play against, cupcakes. And so
it comes tournament time. These are the kind of games you can draw from and look back on and say, okay, we've seen this. I mean, so I love it. And I think, you know, playing Kentucky, when we start that series, that's again, another opportunity to, we've got Kansas next year. Is Kentucky the following year? And who knows? I mean, now that the ACC Big Ten Challenge is over, it may set up a slate with UofL on a home-and-home series somewhere down the road. I mean, why not, right? But I'd love to play them this year.
Yeah.
So, Kansas, I don't know what your prediction is. I just think...
It's not pain. I do think that we'll, we'll see a similar type of effort that we saw after the first, 10 minutes of the Arizona game. I think IU will... We'll fight in that game. We'll find some things that are doing successfully. They are doing successfully, and whether or not they can maximize and capitalize on those things will be the key. So I guess before we get out, Greg, we probably want to do a couple things here. We want to turn our attention to see if there is a listener mailbag question.
There is, and
the mailbag is
some thick paper.
It's hefty. It's got some girth.
So to qualify for the for being chosen, to have your question chosen out of our listener mailbag, I'm not sure we've ever set these credentials for our folks, but you have to mail the letter in.
Mail it. It has to be physical.
Handwritten, yep. Hand-addressed.
Yep. Blue ink. Greg has a big thing about blue ink. It's weird.
The stamp has to be licked. You can't just...
Yeah, that's important.
You can't just have one of those that just peels off and has sticky on it. It's got to be like old school listener mailbag. Loyal listener, Jason from Floyd's Knobs, Indiana. Jason,
thank you for your
Neville
missive.
Actually, Jason has paid a visit to our studio, if but only briefly. And if I look over to my right shoulder, there's a bottle of Jefferson's Ocean
Bourbon
that he provided for us, and he says,
brown liquid of the gods.
He put it in a brown bag, and he wrote, "Long live Hoosier Town Breakdown."
Yeah,
so
we like that.
Big fans. So his question is, and I think actually it's from his son. I
can't stop myself using those sound drops.
His son Sylvan, who's a freshman at Floyd Central.
Nice.
Actually, does some other radio on the 88.1
WNAS.
Yeah. So he said, do you think,
yes.
You got that so far, do you think?
I'm good so far, yeah.
Do you think that Jalen Hood-Schifino could be that last piece that we need in order to make a run in the NCAA tournament? If so, how far do you think we can make it? Absolutely, he is the last piece. He is the piece we need.
Yeah.
A healthy Jalen Hood-Schifino is really what we need. And we need him healthy. We need him playing consistently. We need him on the court. And I do think... if we have that, I think we're a Sweet 16 team, and with a little luck and some favorable matchups, I do think we can get to Elite Eight. And then if Trace is back, does not have recurring issues throughout this year, we could make the Final Four.
Yeah, I probably at this point, probably early in the season, I would have said, I think we're one of those teams that if everything goes right, you have a shot at the Final Four. I still don't eliminate that. I think the odds are longer because we see all the things that have to fall into line, which is healthy Trace, healthy Jalen. We have to do better on the boards, and we have to improve as a team on the boards collectively. We have to be able to hit threes with Miller and Race and some and Bates and some, a combination thereof. And all those things have to fall in line. Now, I still think that IU can get on a run as the as we get to the end of the year, again, if everybody's healthy, that's always the caveat. But I just think we have more things that have to fall just right than a number of other teams. I don't think Purdue is like ahead of us in that regard. Frankly, I think they're going to have the same issue. Having freshman guards, heavily relying on freshman guards, they are going to have hit a plateau, and they're going to also hit a, you know, a challenging point. But the upside for them is they've got a dominant middle because of his size, his freakish size. Edie, you don't have the same problems that Trace can get double and triple teamed, and you just can't throw over and, you know, over them and always get it inside. Edie is almost always able to receive it with a good pass.
Yeah, and I think the thing that could be the difference between us honestly getting bounced in the first round and making it to the Elite Eight, for example, is our outside shooting. I think that's the only thing that concerns me, is consistent outside shooting. Obviously, we know Kopp can really, really, really shoot, but can we get him the looks that he needs? And in a game where maybe he's off, who picks up that slack? I mean, we just don't have that dead-eye shooter besides Kopp. Bates could be the guy that picks up some of the slack. I mean, in the Nebraska game, Galloway hit four threes, Bates hit five. So they're capable, but on the big stage in a tournament game, the tournament is so much about matchups. It's so much about style of play and how the refs are going to call the game. And that's where there's a reason the Big Ten has not won a national championship in over 20 years, 22 to be exact. It's that style does not translate to the tournament. That's what was fun about watching the Arizona game. It was relatively free flowing. You didn't have a lot of plotters. You didn't have a lot of, you know, guys, ogres running up and down the court and trying to hold the ball. And it's just a more fun style. It just is.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that if you run into a team like a Rutgers or a Wisconsin, they know how to kind of junk up the defense to just create some challenging situations on the floor, and your offense doesn't flow. You run into a team like that, and you know it could be a buzzsaw in the NCAA. And you know, we don't have the benefit of a, you know, some sort of round robin. It's a one and done deal, and so lots of great teams that, you know, had a chance to win a national title have gone out in the first weekend or two. So the matchups are absolutely critical. And I think, you know, we still have a lot of work to do on ourselves. And I think if we improve consistency of 3-point shooting, we get better on the boards and the team gets more determined about that. And we get everybody healthy and our bench continues to produce like they have. We're going to be a tough team to play. And that's what you want in the end. You just want a chance. You don't, you know, there's no guarantees. There's no team in the country right now that has a guaranteed, you know, a path to the Final Four. It's just there's no such thing.
You've got to have talent, but you've got to have some luck. And yeah. I will say that the one thing I think will keep us, because you could say, well, our defense hasn't really been as, but, and I go back to Schifino, he's a missing piece on defense too, not just offense and ball handling, but his on-ball defense is incredible.
Very good. And also one of the few guys on the team that can create his own shot.
Absolutely.
So you add all those into the mix. Yeah. We're not saying he's the end-all be-all. He's still going to have freshman moments. He's still going to be challenged. But you add those elements on the floor, it changes a lot. It changes how the defense has to respect him and how they have to guard him. It changes who he can deliver the ball to because of his vision. And
but it also helps us to hang our hat on defense, meaning with a strong defensive team, we can be in any game.
Right.
We saw that without him in the lineup, and you know, the Rutgers and Arizona, we just weren't as strong defensively. He's a very good rebounding guard. We weren't as strong on the rebounding aspect of things. So he is a huge, huge piece. So we just, you know, if he needs to sit the next three games, the next 3 weeks, so be it. If it means that long term he'll be healthy.
Yeah. Greg, we probably need to wrap this up, but we got to touch on another thing. The women's basketball team for IU is 10-0. They are 2-0 in the Big Ten. They are sitting at number 3 or 4, depending on which poll you look at, in the nation. It's pretty amazing. That team just continues to deliver, even with Gracie Berger out. They're still, you know, still playing well. And keeping that streak alive, 10-0.
Been super impressed with that squad, and like you said, with Grace Berger out. Now, the only really, really high-profile game and tough match that we had without her was against North Carolina, and we just absolutely blew them out of the gym. And then they picked up a couple Big Ten wins, Iowa and
Illinois, and
Illinois.
And at Penn State. That was a work on the road.
So they're still doing damage without her, and I really have not heard any kind of a time frame. But, man, those two transfers they picked up, Sydney Parrish and can't think of the other one, but they've got a squad, and that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I was really glad to see. I thought that, you know, going on the road in the Big Ten might be the first really challenging time the team would have without a Berger, but they looked good, and they won comfortably. And
yeah, they've got a couple Christmas cupcakes coming up. I think Morehead State, so they'll enter the new year at minimum top three, I'd say, and then see what happens. Hopefully she can come back.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I mean, just she's awesome. So a
little Hoosier trivia, Alan, we're going to conclude with.
Yeah, give it to me.
It's nothing earth shattering, but little something something. Did you know?
No, probably not.
That the Indiana, our Indiana IU fight song was first performed in 1912 at an IU Northwestern football game. So two questions.
Okay.
Did you know? And the second question, did you care?
More important, really.
And then this reminded me of the Arizona starting lineup. IU has more than 8,500 international students from more than 175 countries. So kind of reminded me of the international team we played on Saturday night in Vegas.
Let's hear it for them. There they are.
Okay. So a little bit of everything today. You got some insight, got a little trivia, got a little listener mailbag.
It's been good.
Got a little sponsorship.
Man, I tell you, I think we've covered the waterfront. All right, well, Greg, I think it's time to wrap it up. And, we're going to use this new little intro extra. No, I don't know
what. I'm excited about the new equipment.
I really like it, too. Well, Hoosier fans, hope you have a great Christmas. We probably won't be back before that. But if we are, then we'll talk to you then.
We will likely talk to you next year.
Maybe next year. See, that's the thing. We do it when we feel like
it. We'll do it whenever we want to do it.
But that's what we like, and hopefully you like it too. So anyway, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next time. So long, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Come on. Me love.